You're listening to Waveforms WGXC, Accra 90.7 FM, Radio for Open Ears. And my name is Mayuko, and this program is Bequency, Meet Bird People in the Hudson Valley. Bequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a freeform mix of sounds made by birds and humans inspired by birds. And speaking of the humans inspired by birds, we started today's show with a track titled Tundra from the album Arctic Summer, a journey across the sonic ecologies of Iceland and Svalbard by wildlife sound recordist and nature guide Mark Namblard. Just came out yesterday. And the guest, the people, the bird, local bird people interview. My today's guest is Bill Mangiardi, who is a director of farm and facilities at Hancock Shaker Village in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Bill's connection to the Shaker philosophy and their farmland goes back to his childhood. He tells us about the Shaker farming practices, the birds and wildlife that find habitat on the farm, and how they connect people. He also shares highlights of the farm's collaboration with the Berkshire Bird Observatory on the Kestrel Nest Box project, which is intended to increase the local American kestrel population, which has also enhanced the experience and education of community members. It's easy to feel powerless in the face of global challenges, but the practical and principled Shaker approach that is at the heart of Bill's work on the farm and his powerful words backed by his experience as a lifelong farmer encourage you that there's always something you can do and that the change you want to see can't start in your local community. And I really feel like this story is something we all need at this time we're living. So I hope you stay tuned and enjoy the show with me. Thanks for tuning in. This is Bequency on WJXC. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today to talk.
Thank you for having me.
Could you briefly introduce yourself?
I'm Bill Mangiardi, Director of Farm and Facilities for Hancock Shaker Village.
Director of the facilities, meaning you take care of the...
All the buildings, all the restoration work, the grounds, security, everything like that.
So
farms, gardens.
Farms and gardens.
750 acres, 25 historic buildings.
And so we're doing this interview today at Hancock Shaker Village Farm. Many people know about the Shaker's handcrafts, but not necessarily familiar with Shaker's farming practice. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted you to talk about that. What are the main principles?
Well, in the early days, what they did here mostly, with the main principle was to stay alive, to make food for the community. Roughly 360, 370 people here. And it was a dairy farm, produced cheese, milk, beef. Their main principle was heaven on earth here, a holy land. They looked for this land. Their motto was hands to work, hearts to God. Everybody was equal here. Everybody rotated jobs. Women and men, everybody rotated everything, jobs. Kids had their own jobs. They were celibates. Back in that day, the most important thing was a roof over your head, food, medical care, schooling for the kids. Well, you came here, you got all that. You just had to do what their rules were and their their philosophy, I guess. You just have to live by what they did. Mm-hmm. If you had three kids back then and could only take care of one or two, they took one. And at 18, that child could go. Mm-hmm. And they took care of them. They would take anybody in. If you were down and out, they made sure you didn't want to hear any excuses. They just took you in and took care of you until you were good. You want to stay, you stay. You want to leave, you leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what their philosophy. But the farming practices in itself, the main thing was to keep the farm a good steward of the land. Good, take care of the land will take care of you. Do the best way. They were on the cutting edge of technology. Unlike the Amish and different people, they embraced technology. If there was a new way to do something, they embraced it.
Mm-hmm. And they also invented some of them.
Inventors, or they took a very good invention and made it better. Mm-hmm. The broom used to be round. I said, we flatten this out, we're covering more space. And so they made the broom flat. The shaker mm-hmm. did that. Mm-hmm. You ever plant seeds to go in your gardens? We all plant seeds. They were the first ones to put seeds in a package and peddle them. And it was very successful. And then they did a lot of other farming for the Navy. Once they started to gather other farms, they brought in, they had a grist mill, they had a dairy, of course, a big dairy. They shipped cheese and milk to different states and different towns and cities. Many hands make light work. You know, if everybody did everything together, it's an easy job. And that's true, and it's true today. We all need to help each other. And if they had a certain job that was many tasks, they brought in more people. And no job was beneath any person. You know, if I run this place, well, I can still clean the stalls. That's how it was. No job was, nobody was better than anybody else. All jobs were considered very important. And they did everything in a very good, straight, practical way. They used, just like their furniture, just like their architect, farming was the same way. Very practical, very smart. Composting. They experienced with composting before anybody really knew about it. To take raw manure and put it into a vegetable garden, well, if it's only that 1 year old, you're going to get everything that cow ate, all that grass seed, multiple different types of forage, you're going to get that in your garden. It's a perfect environment for it. But if it was composted and heated, it kills the weed seed, at least most of it. Modern days, you can really kill just about all of it. But back then, they didn't have the modern equipment. But then that kills it. So now you have black compost potting soil. Now, if you wanted to use that raw manure for a product, you put it in the hay field. Well, then everything that cow eats, that more hay, and that's really, now you're going to get double the crop because it's nutrients and all that seed reseeding it.
I saw that a lot of emphasis on nurturing soil.
Nutrient soils, absolutely. You have to, and that's so important. You can't keep taking away. You can't plant every year and just take away and not put nothing back. Mm-hmm. If you want a good, you want to keep taking something out, you have to put back in, mm-hmm. just like anything. You put money in the bank, you keep taking it out, there's no more money. Same philosophy. Mm-hmm. You have to always put back into anything, whether it's the land, animals, you have to take care of everything. In their farming practice, they treated their animals with such respect, mm-hmm. but they didn't humanize them. They were still animals. They were there for a purpose, but mm-hmm. respect. One golden rule is you didn't beat or you didn't disrespect, treat an animal in the right way. It's not the right thing to do, and that's the way I feel as well here. So today, these practices that I do mimic these things. The difference, well, difference is I have modern equipment. I don't use it during the day because we got an environment where we like to show old-fashioned. I used to work with the oxen. It just takes too much time of my time to do that. Not everybody can do it nowadays. But we still use a lot of the equipment when we're not open and things like that. You come here to visit the village, you don't want to listen to motors and things like that. You want to take beautiful, see the birds, see the animals, see things like that. So the difference is that we progressed over the years to where we're a bit more refined. And we're all natural. We're not organic, we're natural. Organic, that's just a buzzword. We don't use any pesticide. We use no pesticides, no commercial fertilizers. We have two hoop houses down there. The hoop houses are just basically steel frame with plastic. We take that hot manure I was telling you, we put it inside, in the boxes inside, in a growing box, big ones. Now you got all that heat cooking. We put the seed trays on top. We put windows on top of that. Now you got the heat coming up. You got the windows heating that up. But then you got that whole plastic dome on top. So you got plants thriving without any fossil fuels, which is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. When you don't use commercial fertilizer, like, does it affect the amounts that you can harvest?
Depends. Sometimes, yes. Mm-hmm. Natural fertilizer, yes, for sure. But it all depends how you treat that plant. You give it a lot of compost, you're going to get the same results. Mm-hmm. Some of the things you got to watch out for are different. If it's, the compost isn't cured enough, sometimes you introduce a fungus or a mold or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be well cured.
Right, so you have strategies around
Yes.
that. Because I would imagine the development of these fertilizers really just for convenience, I would imagine.
So convenience, yeah. Absolutely, and it saves time. It mm-hmm. takes 2 years to make the right compost. Mm. So before I came, they weren't doing nothing with that. So you know, I brought that back. Not only do we use it in our gardens, mm-hmm. but I sell to all that. The community, all the people, different gardens, they come here all summer. So we took a product that was a waste product and turned it into $50 a yard. Uh-huh. So when you're making money out of a waste product, you're doing pretty good. So what's in that waste product? How does it connect everything? Mm-hmm. Everything on this farm goes into that pile, no sticks. No gravel, stone, nothing like that. But the lawn clippings, the leaves, all the manure, chickens, pigs, cows, all that gets in there and it turns. We turn it until it's as black as gold. And that's what I call it, shaker gold.
Mm-hmm. So in the long term.
So we're not only using that to fertilize our own gardens and produce beautiful food, which it does for the CSA, and we do it in the hay pasture for the cows, for the meat CSA as well, but we sell to the community as well.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Bill Mangiardi, Director of Farm and Facilities at Hancock Shaker Village Farm in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and he's sharing shaker farming practices, and he's going to share stories about birds on the farm and his collaboration with Berkshire Bird Observatory's Kestrel Nest Box Project. Thanks for listening. This is Bee Quincy on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Well, so one of the things I learned about Shaker's farming practice is to always create habitat for wildlife, to create biodiversity in their lands. And your website talked about the native flora and fauna and pollinators and insects. And I imagine that, you know, when insects thrive, birds thrive too often. And so is that the case? Like, what kind of birds find habitats in this farm?
I love birds. Birds are great. And I studied them since I was a small kid. But for the crestal, the boxes, they were very successful. Five little chicks. It was a very successful first time. Ideal area for them because it's a combination of wetlands, meadows, and that type of bird likes little lizards, little grasshoppers, mm-hmm. the bigger ones, things like that. And it's everywhere around here. Other birds, barn swallows, all types of swallows. When you see the bugs, you got a farm, you're going to have bugs around, they're zipping around, they're helping us as well. Mm-hmm. You got, of course, your pigeons and your sparrows and your crows are always around here. And just about everything. I was telling you a little while ago, I saw an eagle out here every year. We have a red tail or two that live in this area. Mm-hmm. In the evening, I've seen owls here. Because again, you got the compost piles, you got mice. You always got them hunting for that. Mm-hmm. The animal part of it, We have coyotes roaming all around, and I believe there's many bear. In earlier years, they used to hunt bears with dogs and everything, and you didn't see as many as you see now. Now there's different laws in Massachusetts, and bear population has really boomed. When I first started here, we had bees. We got a lot of bees right outside the door there. But up until about 5 years ago, we never had to have them fenced in. And one day we came here and they're all ripped apart, and that's a big thing. So you have to have electric now.
So having all these birds, do they bring any direct benefit or
absolutely. The barn swallows eat all the bugs. Mm. We have a good sized bat population around too, which is very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Beneficial
because they eat bugs.
Right, they eat bugs, and then that protects the crops.
Well, anything that can eat a bug protects us.
Protect people, protect cows. Okay.
And you know, that's a funny thing. The Shakers were pacifists, and they used to send the sisters out to pick the potato beetles, off the leaves. And the journals, the ladies would say, "We'd love them to death."
Well, what about the challenges? Do they pose any challenges? I mean, the birds, would they get in your way of farming practice?
Not really. The ones that do the most is the pigeons. They're nuisance around, the droppings. The geese, we have to chase away or they eat our crops, especially in the spring. Mm-hmm. They're out there now because I got winter rye, and there'll be a flock of 30 or 40. Yesterday was a whole bunch. Once they tell their family, they all start coming in. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we get a very, very big, diversified group of birds here. Mm-hmm. And I encourage people to come here. We have a farm and forest trail. Mm-hmm. It's about 25, 30 minutes. Wheelchair accessible, and it goes through the farm and forest and the fields, and it's beautiful. And you could just, as you're walking, it's so quiet. There's no motorized vehicles on it. And you walk through there, and you just see, whether you're seeing deer, you're seeing birds, you're seeing woodchucks all around the place. I like the kids. They all call them woolly bears. They're
woolly
little woodchucks.
Yeah.
Oh, you got woolly bears. And they run around under the buildings and things.
Well, when I got here this morning, I heard killdeer screaming.
And that's one of my favorite birds. Have you ever stopped to see how they fake?
Yes.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah, like
I show kids that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And their nest is just so basic. It's just on the ground, a couple of stones. And you could look right at it and not see their eggs. They just blend right in so perfect.
Dangerous.
We get a lot of killdeers here, and they're on the decline a little bit as well. We try to, if we do see a nest, of course, we stake that right out until they get running all around. Boy, that's a entertaining thing when their little guys are running around for the public. They love that.
Yeah. Also, people get to see that.
Yeah, they get to see that. Wild turkeys with their babies as well. We get a lot of turkeys around here as well.
That is so sweet.
Yeah. Farms usually attract a lot of animals.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All kinds of beautiful songbirds. Mockingbird. Saw a mockingbird last year. Don't usually see them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've seen more and more is great blue herons. They'll be out in the field, whether they're eating the little frogs or... And years ago, you're starting to see different plant species. People call them invasive. Yes, they are invasive because they crowd out the natural plants. But I've noticed over the years, those invasive plants, birds are always eating them, which is not a good thing because they're spreading it. They sit, they sit on the fence line, and that's
right.
The feed. But there's a lot of, it brings in a different variety of birds, I guess, all that type of stuff like that.
So I'm really glad to hear that the Kestrel box is really successful here.
Yes, and Ben was a good part of that. How that got started was one of our interpreters, that's a birder,
mm-hmm.
John Parker, talked to one of his supervisors, Ruth Bird Day, and she sent me an email saying, "Billy, would you be interested in this? on the farm, and right away I said, oh, absolutely, you know, mm-hmm. I enjoy these birds. I just seen one today, you know, I told her, it sits there all the time. And then when Ben came, we scoped the place out. Sure enough, we're standing there, and I go, the best place is that right about here would be a good spot. I see him here all the time. Ben looked on the fence, and he goes, well, there's two of them sitting right there. So we put the box right there.
They were waiting.
Yeah. If you want to know the highlight of it, mm-hmm. was when he came in the fall, he opened that up. We went under a shade tree. We were open for the fall fair, so we advertised it, and the people all came. The visitors came around, and Ben took them out of the nest, banded them, showed the difference between the male, the female, talked about what they ate and how this whole thing got started.
Oh, yes. So it's not just the people at the farm, the public got to see it.
Public got to see it.
Oh,
and when the
so
public
sweet.
Comes, they still get to see it. It just enhances the experience mm-hmm. around here.
And so you're going to do it again this year? I mean, the box
is there. Oh, absolutely.
There,
yeah, yeah.
And Ben came to clean up?
I would, hopefully.
The spring.
If he doesn't, they're on their own. I'm sure they'll be fine.
Well, five chicks, that's a lot.
Yeah,
that's
they
really
did good.
Great. Well, one of the things that Ben was talking about, I interviewed him last year about this very project, about the nest box, and he said to have these collaborations with people, the local landowners, the private landowners, or like nonprofits like Hancock, Shaker Village, was not only helping the birds, but for people to build a sense of community that people got to know each other.
Yeah, absolutely. It connected that bird. Now, anything you can do to enhance the public's experience and knowledge mm-hmm. is a benefit. There's nothing like going out and just seeing them little birds in hand and touching them.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, it's very yeah. special.
Or going walking the fields and seeing everything, or seeing them little eggs and then see them hatch from that killdeer and run around. Mm-hmm. That's something children don't forget. That's something that plants that little excitement where they want to do it again mm-hmm. and again and see what else they can learn or find. Mm-hmm. So that is very important to me. Anything that we can enhance, especially children, their experience and their education, especially about the outside world,
right.
is very important mm-hmm. in today's society.
Community commitment was one of the big pillars for Shaker Principle.
Yes.
And so you've already talked a lot about community engagement of the farm, but I wanted to ask you about other programs like CSA, and mm-hmm. you have partnerships with other organizations too. Would you talk about
Right. So we use a few school groups that come here and help. We have one is Darrell School over the mountain. Another one is Roots Rising, a non-profit organization in town here. We used to have a lot of 4-H groups. 4-H groups have tend to gone down, and different other groups have come up. Not so many animal-oriented children out there anymore. It's more of a vegetable-oriented thing. Our CSA, we have a vegetable CSA. We sell about 60 shares per year, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. All depends on, you know, where we want to put that. It's a lot of labor. It starts, they pay in at the beginning of the year, and for every week starting in June all the way to about the end of October, they get a basket of fruit, vegetables. I don't have one here, but it's a bag that they come. They bring that bag. It's all full, all washed, all ready. Unlike some other CSAs, you probably have to pick it or clean it. This is all done. And they give us their previous week bag, and we give them a new one. Worked out very well. Sold out last year. We usually have a waiting list. That brings people here. Then once they're here, they experience this whole place.
Mm-hmm.
And then whether they're members, whether bring the kids in and see the animals, things like that, but that brings people here. That connects the community with us. And then the kids that are helping out and learning, they're learning and providing food for the community, mm-hmm. which I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a meat CSA. That's in the winter time. We sell certain types of meat, pork, beef, lamb. When they also, whoever gets a basket or a package of meat or a basket of vegetables, they get eggs. Mm-hmm. And today, eggs are pretty valuable.
Yes.
Everybody feeds the water eggs. Can we get more? Can we get more?
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any problem of the avian flu?
Not at this point. You know, our chickens at this time of year are all enclosed. Mm. We don't let them out yet. There's a few that are out here and there. It's always a concern.
Yes.
Since I've been here, I've seen that rise and fall three different times. If it still rises up by the time we open in April, we put bio mats on the ground where they step and basically into a vinegar solution, and that kills any bacteria that they're traveling on their feet. We can't control the whole world or the birds or anything, but you can at least try to do something. In any situation, on a farm or a place, doing nothing's not an option. To me, you have to try to do something, whether it's to save that animal, give it mouth to mouth, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I'm not just going to stand there and watch something disintegrate or turn into a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that's your personal philosophy, but that seems to align with Shaker.
Absolutely. A lot of my aligns. I've been taught that since I was a young child. Mm-hmm. Back in the early days, before this was a museum, my family had cattle here.
Okay.
I still bring cattle here. That's how far this goes back. Mm-hmm. The person that started this, her husband was friends with my father. Mm-hmm. I've had a connection with this place. I've been always told, you want to do something right, you do it like the Shakers did it. Because mm-hmm. it was always right to the cutting edge, perfect. Mm-hmm. Just like their furniture, just like anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Because what you just said reminded me of that Shakers would accept, say, like, racial diversity.
Absolutely.
And equity.
Doesn't matter who you were.
When the outside world is not there yet.
Yeah, and it's still not there. It's no different. 200 years later, and it's still not there. It's amazing.
Yes.
But yes, they were diversified. Everybody was welcome here. Mm-hmm. You just had to live, like I said at the beginning, by their rules or their philosophy, and you could go at any time. But I didn't care. They didn't care if you were black, white, or green. They didn't care if you were homeless or rich. Mm-hmm. They took care of you. You had a problem, you came here, they reached out to you. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to hear any of your problems. They just wanted to help.
I find it very powerful because when you look at the bigger picture of what's going on in the world, it's very easy to feel discouraged or feel powerless about it. But this whole Shaker community and what you do here now sort of gives you an inspiration that you can change your own community and make something that you want happen within this. It may be smaller scale, but you can do something about it, like you said, in the place where you are.
I think that's very true. I think anybody that has an opportunity or the privilege of being in a place where they can move that forward and keep people engaged and educated, whether it's a small scale or a big scale, it's always a benefit.
So today, this village is not open yet for the season.
Right.
But in the month, you'll be
12th.
Open.
12th. April 12th.
April 12th.
Baby animals on the Shaker Farm.
Uh-huh.
I'll be waiting for you.
I'll be back, yes.
You better be back.
Yes.
Both of you. I personally think this place is an outdoor classroom. There's nothing better for young children to come here and learn. I think it's one of the best places, not to see how things were, but how things could be, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, fantastic.
Killdeer. Thank you. As I was walking for my recreation, down by the green meadows I silently strayed. There I met a fair maid making great lamentation. Old Jimmy will be slain in the wars, I'm afraid. The blackbirds and thrushes sing in the green bushes. The lark and the dove seem to mourn for this maid. And the song she sang concerning her lover, old Jimmy will be slain in the wars, I'm afraid. When Jimmy returned with his heart full of yearning, he found his dear Mary all dead in her grave. He cried, I'm forsaken, my poor heart is breaking. That I never had left this fair maid.
That was Blackbirds and Thrushes by British folk singer Shirley Collins from her 1959 album Sweet England. And before that we heard Killdeer field recordings from Stokes Field Guide to Bird Songs. Bill said that was one of his favorite birds. And we mentioned a little bit in the interview, and Bill said how they fake. Well, the parents of killdeer, when they start nesting and having eggs on the ground, the nest is on the ground, like Bill said, the parents trying to fake that they're injured, they start showing off, like, flapping wings in a weird way and like start screaming like, oh my god I'm injured or whatever, so that they can distract predator or people's attention from away from their nests and their eggs and their chicks. And so it's a really dramatic action you can enjoy looking. I mean, enjoy, it's not kind of mean, but. And then the chicks, when they hatch, like Bill said, it's just so damn cute. It's the way they run around with tiny, tiny legs and tiny wings. It's just so, so cute to see it. And I guess apparently you can see that if you visit Hancock Shaker Museum in the village in the April, I would say. The public gets to see it, according to Bill. So you may want to check that out. Thanks again to Bill Mangiardi for this truly powerful conversation. And I'll be posting a transcript of this interview that also includes the relevant links and photos from the farm that I took on the day of the interview. They're going to be published on Bequency website, which is at bequency.substack.com. If you're curious about the Kestrel Nest Box project by the Berkshire Bird Observatory, you can also find my interview with Ben Nickley, who's the founder of the BBO and the guy who's running this Kestrel Nest Box project, which is really interesting story, that you can find that link also on that website at bequencysubstack.com. And my biggest takeaway personally from this conversation with Bill is that he said you can't keep taking away. You have to give back, like nurturing soil for your farm or your bank account. And I think it's so important to do that sort of what people say regenerative farming, but you do that to your spirit too. If you hear one horrible story that makes you feel down, you must find one good story that lifts your spirit up to bring the balance back, to restore the balance back. You know, if you had a difficult day, at least reward yourself maybe with your favorite snack or something, or even better, maybe go out and watch birds. There's plenty of them coming back because it's springtime. I really just think it's so important to refill joy and beauty, to just put back into your mental bank account, you know, listening to beautiful, interesting music that is not for commerce but for more for exploration, you know. That's one of the things we do here at WGXC and here at Bequency. I always got a great story of great people in our local community for you if you ever need a refill. And I really think as people living in the United States, we need to be kind of really aggressive about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which are in the Declaration of Independence. And so I hope you enjoy the story of my today's show, and I hope it kind of helps you lift up your feelings a little bit. If you'd like to learn more about the Hancock Shaker Village, their community and programming, you can find more information at hancockshakervillage.org. That's one word, hancockshakervillage.org. And the information about the Baby Animals Festival thing that Bill was talking about, it's happening from April 12th to May 4th. The information is also available there at the website. I mean, no doubt that Baby Animals will do some good mental refill for all of us. No failure there. There was a also a mini series of interviews of the Shaker Museum staff here on WGXC last year, which you can still find the archive and listen by searching for Shaker Show, a quarterly glimpse into the inner workings, values, and dreams of Shaker Museum and the Shakers themselves. You can search it and find it and listen to it. And then now it's the time for bird-inspired music of the month. We're going to listen to a brand new release, a collaboration pieces. I would like to play too if I don't run out of time. Collaboration pieces between two Japanese artists, Yumiko Morioka and Takashi Kokubo, who became really well known through the Kankyo Ongaku style of environmental ambient music. That's what they kind of call it. Environmental ambient music scene in the 80s. And they just released a new work yesterday, March 21st, 2025. Brand new album. It's titled Gaiaphilia. And the first track is titled Birds of Borneo. That's what we're going to hear next. And then I'm hoping to play another track, which is the title track, Gaiaphilia. So I hope you stick around and enjoy the show. This is Bequency on WGXC. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Morioka Yumiko on piano and Kokubo Takashi on field recording, and they gave us a track titled Gaiaphilia. Just came out yesterday. And that's it for my show today. You've been listening to Waveforms WGXC Acra 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears. This program has been Bequency, Meet Bird People in the Hudson Valley, and I have been Mayuko. I'm here every fourth Saturday of the month at 11 a.m. Eastern Time till noon, so I'll be back next time. We'll be on March 26th at 11 a.m., I believe so. I hope you'll join me again. Coming up next here on WGXC is New Music Committee Picks. It's a selection of local music and new releases. You too can submit your new music to us at music@wgxc.org. It is your important duty, music people, to keep producing joy and beauty to counterbalance the mess that we got going on right now. You know, we can't always be angry and fighting because you can't keep taking energy away from yourself, like Bill said. Anger is one of the paths to depression, which is not about being sad, but about the loss of energy to live. So in order to stay angry, you need to restore your energy with joy and beauty. So please, music people, keep on doing what you're doing. And when you do make them, you know, please consider sending it to us here at WGXC so we can broadcast them to the world. So again, the email is at music@wgxc.org. And that's it for my show today. I hope you enjoy the beautiful spring bird season. And thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your weekend.